I'm going to be making the case that post-modernity, rather than dying and going away, has actually become the default setting for the way people think in many of the churches today.
Chris Roseborough, on his presentation, Postmodernism in the Church, at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois.
As a result of it, it constitutes a significant threat against biblical, historic, Orthodox Christianity, because its epistemology is extremely irrational, subjective-based, and in fact, it's even a form of enthusiasm, God-withinism, that at the end of the day has as its project the eroding away and deconstructing of what historic Christianity teaches and confesses.
You can find out more about the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois, at issuesetc.org.
We need to understand what the misery of God means. Our Father, full of mercy, has also a lot of patience. God does not get tired of forgiving us. We should not get tired of asking Him to forgive us.
And I bet there are a lot of people who might return to the church if it changed. After tonight's celebrations are over, the big question will be whether Pope Francis will be that change.
Don't go changing to try and please me.
Before long, the churches started looking like revival meetings. Cantles were gone, pulpits were gone, baptismal fonts gone, Lord's table gone, because you had to have a stage for the evangelist personality and charisma.
Indiana truck drivers, rubbish, etc.
What are we to make of this? In Islamic countries, the Islamic leaders preach jihad. They preach not peace, but essentially, in one form or another, warfare against the infidel, against the unbeliever. From their perspective, that would be anyone who isn't a Muslim. But here in the West, both in Europe and the United States, Muslims preach tolerance and religious tolerance above all else. Is this two different Islams? Is one real and one false? How do we sort that out? We're going to be talking about Islamic jihad and just war theory here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're coming to you live this Monday afternoon. It's the 18th of March. David Wood will be our guest a little bit later. Chris Roseborough joins us from Fighting for the Faith. We're going to talk about Emergent Church Leader Rob Bell's endorsement this weekend of same-sex marriage. He says, we just need to affirm everyone wherever they're at. That was basically his answer to a question on where he currently stood on same-sex marriage or marriage equality. Pastor Tom Baker will join us in hour two. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson, the Lord's Supper, in Luke chapter 22. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. David Wood is host of a live talk show for Aramaic Broadcasting Network called Jesus or Muhammad. He's author of an article in the latest Christian research journal titled Jihad, Jizya, and Just War Theory. David, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, how's it going, Todd?
I'm doing very well. You say that when Western Muslims preach tolerance and, say, for instance, a Pakistani Muslim leader preaches jihad, they're both reading the same Quran. What do you mean by that?
Well, whether we go to the Quran or we go to the life of Muhammad or we go to the Hadith, which is another source that Muslims believe in, we find the exact same pattern. And what we find is that jihad proceeds in stages. And at the stage where Muslims make up a small percentage of the population, if they make up, say, 1% or 2% of the population and can't possibly hope to win a physical confrontation with unbelievers, they are commanded in the Quran and the Hadith and by the example of Muhammad to proclaim a message of peace and tolerance. So they are to call for religious tolerance. Hey, let's all get along. This is what Surah 109 of the Quran is about. It commands Muslims to say to those who disagree with them, you have your religion and we have our religion. So Christians would look at this and say, hey, great, if we're going to disagree, you know, let's disagree and get along otherwise. But that's not the final revelation of the Quran. because that's that was the message Muhammad delivered when he was a persecuted prophet in Mecca. He had about 100 followers and was vastly outnumbered. Later, Muhammad was able to form some alliances with other groups, military alliances, and he had a larger number of followers, and the message changed. Suddenly, in Quran 22, in chapter 22 of the Quran, we see Muslims being given permission to fight people, provided that these people are causing trouble for the Muslim community in some way. So if people are attacking the Muslim community or persecuting the Muslim community, or even, as well, you know, as other passages of the Quran show, even if they're criticizing Islam or Muhammad, then you can fight defensively. The goal here is not subjugating everyone else. The goal here is to defend the Muslim community and to defend the religion of Islam from attack. That's stage two. This is defensive jihad. And stage three comes when Muslims form sort of a majority in the population. They can actually physically dominate other groups. And this we see in Surah 9 of the Quran, which is when Muhammad was able to conquer Mecca and a large part of Arabia. And the command at this stage is, I'll just read it straight out of the Quran, Surah 9, verse 29, commands Muslims, fight those who believe not in Allah, nor the last day, nor hold that forbidden which hath been forbidden by Allah and his messenger, nor acknowledge the religion of truth, that's Islam, from among the people of the book, this is specifically addressing Jews and Christians, until they pay the jizya with willing submission and feel themselves subdued. Now, notice what this says. It doesn't say fight people who are attacking you anymore. It says fight those who do not believe in Allah. And so this is what Muslims are commanded to do when they are capable, when they have the resources to actually subjugate other groups. They are commanded to do so. So the general principle is to do whatever is in the best interest of the Muslim community. In areas where Muslims are in the minority, it's in the best interest of the Muslim community to promote tolerance and religious equality and so on. When Muslims are able to start defending themselves against criticism and so on, and they're able to do that, they're able to go out and fight, then they're commanded to do that. When they can actually subjugate and dominate and enforce Sharia, it's in their best interest to do that. And what's interesting is this is the pattern laid down in the life of Muhammad in the Quran and the Hadith. And it's exactly what you see in the world today. So if you look at a place in the United States, where Muslims make up a small percentage of the population, the message of Islam is peace and tolerance. If you look at certain places in Africa, where they make up 20 or 30% of the population, you see a lot of, you know, churches being burned and stuff like that over the slightest offense. And if you look to places where Islam actually dominates, you see that Islam is enforced and other groups are subjugated. This would be places like Pakistan and Iraq and Egypt, where you have significant non-Muslim minorities, but they are second-class citizens.
With all that said, would you concede that there are westernized Muslims who really do mistakenly think that their religion is about tolerance? They've lived their entire lives in the United States and have never heard anything but tolerance preached in the mosque. They think that's what Islam is really all about, and they're shocked to see Islam elsewhere in the world carrying out the further stages of jihad.
Oh, no question. I think that's most Muslims who live in the West. And I'd say, just to be clear on this, I think most Muslims who live in the West are raised with a lot of the same values that non-Muslims are raised with. So we're all, in other words, religion isn't the only influence on people here in the West. We're influenced by music, by teachers, by movies, by all kinds of things. And so people grow up, regardless of their religion, they grow up in the West with a lot of the same political or ethical values. And I think Muslims who grow up in the West, most of them do believe in, you know, religious tolerance and so on. So I just want to be clear that I'm talking about what the religion actually teaches, and that when a Muslim in the West, even if he actually believes that Islam is peaceful and tolerant, he is doing what his religion commands him to do, even though from the religious perspective, from the perspective of someone who's very educated about Islam, the goal is not a lasting peace. The goal is to protect the Muslim community until a time in the future when the numbers are much higher. But you're absolutely correct that I would say most Muslims here in the West, and I would say even lots of Muslims in Muslim countries in the Middle East, wouldn't like a lot of the violent teachings of Islam, but that is what the religion teaches.
Now, some people theorize that, look, what we've got is really two Islams. We've got kind of a westernized and reformed Islam, and then we have old Islam or a more primitive form of Islam, less sophisticated. And what really needs to happen with Islam is reform, like perhaps we've seen in Christian circles. What's your, with about 2 minutes before our break, what's your response to that?
Well, when we talk about reform in Christianity, we talk about getting rid of the extra baggage that Christianity has taken on over time and getting back to the actual message of Jesus. When you do that in Islam, you don't get something that's more peaceful. You get something that's more radical and violent. And so a reform in Christianity is getting back to the basics of Christianity, but getting back to the basics of Islam would be something very different. And so when people talk about sort of a peaceful reform of Islam, what you mean is Islam adopting non-Islamic values and totally contradicting the teachings of the Quran and the Hadith, which call for the subjugation of non-Muslims. And what's interesting is according to Islam, to reinterpret Islam in that way, to reinterpret passages where we have Muhammad's interpretation, that's called innovation in Islam, and it's one of the things that gets you a one-way ticket to hell, reinterpreting Muhammad's teachings to fit your own values instead of conforming your values to fit with Muhammad's teachings.
So you're saying that if that vision of reform were carried out on Islam, Islam would no longer be Islam?
Yeah, it would be something un-Islamic and something that if you're an adherent of it, you would be declared by Muhammad to be an apostate.
David Wood is our guest. We're talking about Islamic Jihad and just war theory. And when we come back on this Monday afternoon, we'll turn to a comparison, if we can, between what we've talked about here, the various stages of jihad and how jihad is actually carried out according to Islamic teaching and just war theory. Can the two be made to reconcile with one another? That's a big question, and some people say yes. Yes, with that possible reform of Islam, we will see Islam not calling for jihad the way it has, but it can actually be a justified war. Is that possible? I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We'll be right back.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
International human rights attorney and law professor Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on the importance of Issues Etc.
Before settling in England and France, I had my own Christian radio program for 10 years in California and 2 years in Washington State. I was also a regular for over a decade on national religious television. In a word, I have had a great deal of contact with evangelical programming, both good and bad, and my judgment in this area is probably worth something. In my opinion, Issues Etc. is one of the very few programs on Christian radio willing to discuss tough questions with solid theological answers. I consider it a great privilege to be able to appear on the program regularly, and I commend it to every serious listener.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift today. Donate online at issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Defending the Faith, Teaching the Truth, Issues, etc.
Welcome back to Issues, etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about Islamic Jihad and Just War Theory. David Wood is our guest. He's host of a live talk show for Aramaic Broadcasting Network called Jesus or Mohammed. You'll find a link to Jesus or Mohammed at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Our call-in number as we talk about Islamic Jihad and Just War Theory, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. David, let's turn to Just War Theory. Can you explain in a nutshell what it is?
Well, it's exactly what it sounds like, that there are some ideas of what constitutes a just war, a fair war. And so the what's being presupposed here is that there are conditions that would justify going to war. So if Nazis are trying to take over the entire world and are exterminating people in gas chambers, most people would consider that a just cause to go and fight against that. So just war theory is sort of putting together and defining the principles that would make something a just war rather than something like going around and just, you know, torturing people and stuff like that, what constitutes a just war.
So in the world of Islam, what is the theory of war that they have?
Well, in Islam, the commands are to go out and subjugate everyone based on what they believe and what they practice. But it's not just straightforward immorality. It's disagreeing with them on, you know, issues like prayer, disagreeing with them on issues like what foods to eat and so on. It's specifically commanded to go out and fight people for the sake of this religion, and the targets of the war are people who are disagreeing with the religion of Islam. And so there are no accounts of just war theory that would say you go out and violently subjugate everyone who doesn't agree with your religion, but that's exactly what you find in Islam. It's sort of the basis for this, for why you can do this and why there aren't a whole lot of rules for how you can treat the unbeliever, is that according to the Quran, and this is Surah 3, verse 32, if anyone wants to look it up, Surah 3, verse 32 says that Allah has no love for unbelievers. So that's the difference between Islam and something like Christianity, where according to Christianity, we're supposed to love all people. We're supposed to pray for our enemies because God loves them. So you have one religion which teaches God only loves people who follow the religion, another religion that teaches God loves everyone. That's part of the reason that just war theory sprang up in its fully developed form among people like Augustine and Aquinas, and why it's also why you don't have anything comparable in Islam.
So Islam basically divides all of humanity, essentially all the globe, into two classes of people, Muslims and non-Muslims.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
So whereas just war theory doesn't really even take into account your enemy's beliefs, it's crucial to Islam's view of the enemy.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So if that's the contrast here, is there any common ground between a Western Judeo-Christian view of war and the Islamic view of war?
Well, you in the Muslim sources, you don't. It could be worse. It could be the treatment of unbelievers could be worse. If you're a Jew or a Christian, according to the Quran, Muslims aren't supposed to just go out and indiscriminately slaughter you. They are taught to impose jizya on you, which means you live as a second-class citizen and you have to pay tribute to the Muslim community for the right of not being killed. They do show some degree of respect for non-Muslims in that at least they're not just told to indiscriminately slaughter everyone. But beyond that, I mean, Christians are commanded to live in peace with all men. we're told to put down our swords. These are the sorts of commands that are applied to Christians in the New Testament. And in Islam, you have something very different. Now the only sort of common ground I think you could find is that if Muslims are in a minority, if Muslims make up a minority of the population, so if they're one group among several other groups, then since they're commanded to promote a message of peace and tolerance, then in theory they would live in tolerance and peace with other groups so long as they make up a small portion of the population. So in a place like the United States, there's no question Muslims and Christians and Jews can get along. But in places like, you know, Saudi Arabia or Egypt or Iraq or something like that, there's just, I don't see any hope for common ground that would ever be based on Islamic teachings.
If someone objects and says, look, what we really have is just, you know, Muhammad never envisioned anything like global domination. He couldn't have. He was a 7th century man. He was just about carving out his own territory for his own people. Do you think that applies to Islam today, a global Islam?
Well, there's no question. I mean, even Muhammad said he'd been given a vision by Allah where the Muslim community dominated the entire world. So the Muslim community is, according to Islam, eventually going to subjugate the entire world. And so that was the plan of Muhammad, and that's exactly what Muhammad and his closest companions and the leaders that followed him actually did. It was the early history of Islam is just constant expansion until they eventually hit a wall in Europe, and they eventually hit a wall in Southeast Asia. But the community expanded very rapidly, and it wasn't until they just didn't have the ability to conquer the people that they came up against that the expansion stopped. And so as long as that's the case, as long as Islam can't continue to expand, well, then obviously it won't. But again, if we're talking about what Muhammad taught his followers to keep on fighting, to keep on subjugating until Islam dominates the entire world.
How do you then see things progressing? I mean, at this point, as we said early in our conversation, Islam in the United States and to a lesser degree in Western Europe is a very small fraction of the population. How do you see things progressing in the West?
Well, I can see a sort of worst case scenario, and the worst case scenario would be if people continue to ignore sort of the spread of Islam in Europe. If you look at basic statistics about the growth of Islam, then within a couple decades, within our lifetimes, we're going to see at least major European cities become Muslim-majority cities, and possibly entire countries become Muslim-majority countries. That's not the case in the West. Islam isn't growing. I mean, in America, Islam isn't growing fast enough to take over the population in the foreseeable future. But it is the case in Europe that given present rates of growth, unless something changes, just mathematically, Muslims are going to form a majority in many areas. And so sort of a worst case scenario would be Islam starts taking over places and we end up with a war in Europe. I'm hoping things never, ever come to that. And the reason I think that there's hope is because Islam can really only thrive in an atmosphere where it's not questioned, it's not criticized. Because when you examine the basis for the claim that Muhammad's a prophet, it just can't stand up to scrutiny. And as more and more people learn about what Islam teaches, you have lots of people who recognize that Islam just isn't true. And that's why there's such a violent reaction to any criticism against Islam or against Muhammad in Muslim countries, is it can't stand up to scrutiny. So what I think is going to happen, I'm optimistic, is that people are going to start examining Islam as they continue to see, just things in the news. They start to look into Islam, and I think more and more people are going to start catching on. And I think more and more Muslims are going to start catching on. I hope it doesn't end up with something worse, but I think that with the spread of information, that I don't think we'll see any kind of takeover here in the West of Islam. In other words, Muhammad commanded his followers to go out and subjugate. They hit a wall in Europe a long time ago, and I don't think they're going to be able to break through that.
And finally, with only about a minute here, do you find this with the Muslims with whom you debate, that on that issue of not being able to stand up to scrutiny, do you find that kind of apologetic tactic makes any headway with them? About a minute before we wrap it up, David.
Well, yeah, one of the Muslims that I think I had five or six debates with over the years, his name is Farhan Qureshi, but he recently left Islam. He's not a Christian. He's kind of a sort of an agnostic who believes in a higher power. But it's the same wherever you go. Some people are going to cling to what they believe no matter what, and some people are going to evaluate it and say, you know, I just can't defend this anymore. And so, yeah, there are going to be Muslims who, no matter what you say, they're going to cling to Islam. But I know this because I know several people who've left Islam, either becoming Christians or becoming, just secular or something like that. But there are people out there who, once they learn about what Islam teaches, they are willing to go where the evidence points.
David Witt is host of a live talk show for Aramaic Broadcasting Network called Jesus or Muhammad, author of an article in the latest Christian research journal titled Jihad, Jizya, or Just War Theory. David, thanks for being our guest.
All right, brother.
When we come back, we're going to talk with Chris Rosebro about the emerging church leader Rob Bell's endorsement of same-sex marriage. Islam, worship, feminism, pietism, postmodernism. You can meet and hear Issues Etc. regular guests discussing these topics at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Registration is $100 per person. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14 and 15 in Collinsville, Illinois, issuesetc.org.
Hi, this is Jonathan Collin from France.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
First, I would like to say thank you very much for your program. It very much ministers to those of us who are outside the comforts and the luxuries of having a confessional Lutheran congregation nearby. Thank you very much for this great resource.
Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. IssuesETC.org.
This is Pastor Jeff Siegel of St. Mary Evangelical Lutheran Church in Des Moines, Iowa, where God gathers us around His means and grace to offer us forgiveness, life, and salvation. Whether you are looking for a church or just visiting Des Moines, if you like Issues Etc., St. Mary's is the church for you. Join us as we gather together every Sunday to continue the Reformation tradition of Christ-centered, cross-focused worship, preaching, and teaching. For more information, go to www.stmarylutheran.org. Remember to spell out saint.
At steadfastlutherans.org, we've been called contentious. We've even been called the brothers of John the curmudgeon, and we may well be curmudgeonly sometimes. But we always have the best and clearest voices in confessional Lutheranism. Articles from Molly Hemingway, Martin Nolan, Clement Preuss, Todd Wilkin, and a host of regular contributors. Come check out the new Lutheran media. Always clear, always concise, always confessionally Lutheran. steadfastlutherans.org.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Technology's doing great things to help us protect babies and moms from abortion. QR codes are now being printed on pro-life literature to direct pregnant women to more information. QR codes are small square patterns. When read with a smartphone, can take viewers to a brief video showing 3 and 4D ultrasound of a baby in the womb. The codes can be used to provide a wealth of pro-life information. Imagine a young girl sitting in the waiting room of an abortion mill. She pulls the video up on her phone and may even share it with other women there. It's a marvelous breakthrough to save lives. The applications are endless. The QR code app is available free. Visit today's broadcast link at lifeissues.org to get more information on how you can help save lives.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.